Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge introduces incredible stories shared by women across the globe who have experienced the great heights of success and, at times, the agony of defeat. With a vision to impart wisdom and advice on how to tackle barriers and soar to new heights, the show uncovers different perspectives to help you find your inner strength and to power up your own voice so you can excel in life.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Women Worldwide. I'm your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Today's show, which features another Visionary Woman Award winner, is sponsored by Moore College of Art and Design in Philadelphia. Moore is the first and only women's visual arts college for undergraduates in the United States. All right, let's get to our special guest, who I'm very excited for you to meet. Renowned for her extensive knowledge of classic and eclectic European design, New York interior designer Alexa Hampton joins us on the show. She continues to grow her interior design firm, Mark Hampton LLC, and her home furnishing product lines through Alexa Hampton, Inc. She lectures internationally. She has two books. She was the first and only female cast member to make regular appearances on This Old House, and she's also had a column with the Wall Street Journal. I could go on and on about you, Alexa, but I want you to share your journey with everybody.
I wish you'd go on and on. I really love hearing it.
Well, you have a lot to share, many accolades, but it's such a pleasure to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Now, of course, the most important accolade was from Moore College, but...
You know, yes.
To get that
absolutely.
Visionary Woman Award had to be a singular honor.
That is a huge honor. And how does that make you feel with all the accolades that you have?
Totally self-involved and happy. You know, when you're feeling blue, you just read awards and you feel better. Yeah. No, that's very shallow.
You know, sometimes that's really good advice, though, to remember all the things. Sometimes we focus on the not so great things. That's I don't know right. why, but those accolades are important. You know, when I first started researching you, I came across a segment that you did on Martha Stewart, and you were actually helping an audience member to redesign their bedroom. You were giving advice, and you had a picture of the bedroom in front of you, and your mind was just creating this gorgeous design showing how it needed a headboard, and you changed the drapes and the closets. And I was just amazed. So I wonder, when did you first figure out, hey, I want to be an interior designer?
Well, you know, my story is, very unusual because my father was one of the most amazing American designers of all time. So he worked at Parrish Hadley. Then he worked for David Hicks when he was a young man in London, though he was not British. And then he opened Mark Hampton in 1976. And he did the White House. He did the Naval Observatory. He had commissions all over the world. He did the American Embassy in Paris. Every boldface name of that era, like the 70s and 80s, and early 90s. He died in 98. He worked for, and he was such a hero to many, but most of all to his daughter looking on to him, that I was like, wow, what's he doing? I want to do that. So that's an unusual, circumstance. And because he and my mother were so obsessed with houses and gardens and museums, I can happily report, I have no idea how to ski. In fact, my kids and my husband are off skiing right now without me because I spent my whole youth going to museums and houses. And, I like to joke that I've been to every church in Europe, and we are not religious people. And my sister, who's an actress, knows more about Palladio and Pugin and Titian than she ought to. But that was the culture of the household.
That's fascinating.
That was a really long answer. I apologize.
No, that I loved your answer. And Did he sort of take you under his wing? And when you, after I'm sure you graduated from school, did you work directly with him or did you go off on your own?
Well, first of all, he had a very big business, so it wasn't like he was bringing me to work kind of thing. But he suffered my presence for sure.
In what way?
When I was 13, a month every summer, I would work for his office. So I would be, you know, there's plenty to do in a design firm, much of it work a day. So whether it's going to get samples or answering the phones or organizing the library, I mean, there are tasks that need to be accomplished. And whether you have a young dog's body around to do it or not, like, then you're going to have to do it. So there were always things for me to do. And then in college, I didn't study art history or anything in college. I went to Brown and studied literature and history. But then every summer, for the whole summer, I would work for him. And then I took a semester working for him. And then, you know, after I graduated, started working full time before grad school. You know, I've been coming to the same office since 1984.
Oh my gosh.
Which seems so weird, kind of endless. You know, the only way I can actually tell time these days is through my kids. I'm like, oh yeah, that was before the kids. That was after the kids. That's when they were this age. Because everything else has been the same for me for a long, long time.
What did you like to do the most as a younger interior designer? Do you remember those days, those summers?
Yeah, I loved going to the D&D, which is our design center, and shopping for fabric. And then, you know, scheming is what we call assembling a fabric scheme. It sounds like we're plotting the demise of the world, but it's just putting fabrics together. I loved being with the other designers and seeing what they were doing. So there was a blend of autonomous activity where you were doing things yourself and then activity where you could actually be mentored. And then we would always have big office meetings with my father. So I'd get to hear globally what was happening in the office and, you know, where certain projects were, the status of them. So there was a lot to interest a person, and also in different fashions. You know, you could look at little detailed things, you could hear about larger things, you'd hear about construction, but you could also be looking at a beautiful hand-painted wallpaper. So there's really nice mix of practical tasks and activities that happen in a design firm and, you know, the beautiful high-minded design things.
Do you think you had more or less pressure because your dad owned the company?
Well, I started calling him by his first name very early, which to a lot of people, you know, I wasn't going to whine around being like, Daddy.
Yes.
I don't know if it's pressure. You've always got to take it hand in hand with the benefits, right? So nobody wants to hear that you felt pressure. I think I felt lucky that he was my father, that I could go home with him and, you know, have a normal father-daughter relationship. Because in the office, it was, you know, worker.
Work.
Though sometimes he would tell me to put lipstick on. He'd be like, oh, you look terrible. You put on some lipstick. Which I sincerely hope he didn't tell other people. But since his death, you know, he died at 58. He died
very young.
And I was 27 when I took over the company. And definitely there was so much love for him and goodwill that whatever pressure I felt was equal to the support I got from the design community and from people who hired us.
27 is young to take over a company. I mean, that's an amazing feat in and of itself.
Well, I mean, it's lucky it ended up with me talking to you on a podcast. You know, it could have gone either way. and I think, you know, there's... You got to be, this sounds like I stitched it on a pillow or read it from a pillow, but that old saying of you've got to be willing to be lucky. Right. You know, you work hard and be available for good fortune when it shows up.
Did you feel in your heart that you were ready to take over, or was it just something that you said, I'm going to do this?
Yeah. Absolutely not. And he was diagnosed with cancer in February and died in July of the same year.
Oh, my goodness.
So we really didn't have time to discuss, you know, that's just not a conversation we were going to have. Like, hey, daddy, you're dying. What should I do? So it was in an interesting way for young designers who were going out on their own. You know, I had the benefit of having a structure that was created, you know, including a bookkeeping department and all of these things that were in place. But like any other entrepreneur who's starting their own company, some of the benefits are I didn't know some of the habits of the business, and I was able to shape some of them to suit my preferences. You know, like when we submit a request for a fee or how I wanted to start saving money to have money in, you know, off to the side saved to have a cushion for the company. There were things that I was able to direct because I had no former knowledge of how it was done.
Which is almost a good thing.
No, I thought it was a good thing. It's funny to be like, oh, I was very fortunate to be so ignorant. It sounds odd.
Well, I'm curious, being in your father's design firm and then taking it over, were there a lot of female designers, male designers? What did the ratio look like?
Over the years, it always had both. Then it always had both. Right now, just dumb luck, just the way, you know, it's shaken out, is we're all women right now.
Yeah. Yeah. For some reason in my mind, you know, I did see a lot of women. As an interior designer, and I don't know if this is a hard question, but can you describe your style? Do you have a certain sort of flair or mark? And maybe...
Well, I hope I have a certain flair. Yes,
you definitely have. You know,
I have no flair. No flair here. keep looking. No. I hope I don't have a trademark style, if that's what we're talking about. I tend to skew traditional, though I do modern as well. Or maybe I shouldn't say traditional, but my background is so based upon knowledge of former styles that I can't help but to be informed. You know, I don't design in a vacuum, but I see my job as a decorator. It's really to tease out the best version of my client's style. So I'm sure if you looked at my apartment, I could say to you, that's my style. But when I work for other people, I don't want to impose my apartment on them. We also might have very different budgets, but I want to get the best version of their style so that when they come home, they're like, this is my house.
I actually have two questions. I kind of wanted to know how you feel and if your style has changed over the years, but then I also, and then we'll key into something important that you said about your client's style. So would you say that you've changed over the years, or are you sort of stay with your, what kind of?
No, I've definitely changed. Yeah. I go through phases. You know, when I first took over the firm after years of observing the boom, boom 80s and the early 90s, I needed to go cleaner. You know, I wanted fewer tape trims and tassels, and I needed a purge. Mm-hmm. And now the notion of not having all of those flourishes is beyond me. I love them. I desperately desire them. So I think I'm affected by the pendulum swings of environment, and I don't want to say fashion. I don't want to be swayed by fashion, but maybe I am a little bit. But also, you know, if I use certain schemes or looks for a client predominantly in some space for them, I don't want to use them again. I want to retire them. You know, if it's obviously a tape trim, you're not going to retire. But like big pattern fabrics, or you don't want one client walking into another client's house and seeing the same
thing. Oh, exactly.
So that does force you to change and in some respects, and then you figure out what you think are the classics by what you keep.
That's interesting. You mentioned how, you know, you want to bring out the best in each client. So how do you actually do that? How much time would you have to spend with a client? Or are you just really going into their space and looking at what they have and saying, you know, applying design principles to what they have?
Well, I never swan in and preach from on high. I always spend time talking to them about their goals. You know, how do they live? If they don't live that way, how do they want to live? How do they want to use this space? You know, do they entertain a lot? Do they entertain not at all? Do they need TVs in every room? Are they big cooks? All that jazz. So it always starts with an ample amount of practical information. And then definitely I look at what they have, and of what they have, what do they like? You know, sometimes they've fostered hatred for what they have and they don't want anything like it again. Or finding what's important to them that they already have that we need to incorporate in the new design. Yeah, I mean, it's a dialogue for sure.
Definitely. Are there clients who, and I don't know if this is a difficult or an easy client, but does anybody just ever say, oh, Alexa, just design for me? Doesn't you have that?
Not really. Not really. That doesn't really happen. I'd be very scared of that.
Yeah.
There are some people who are more involved and some people who are less involved. But, you know, I really want it to suit them. So it's scary if there's no interplay.
I heard one of the guests on this show who was a doctor, is a doctor. She was saying that when she first meets with a patient, that it usually takes about 20 minutes or so to fully get to the heart of what's the matter. Does it take?
What kind of doctor was
she? Actually, I think she was cancer. So is it the same thing with design? Do people necessarily know, or does it take some time?
No, not always. It takes some time. It also, just the way you can go to a restaurant and order fish, and the minute you have it and you look at somebody else's steak, you're like, I should have ordered this steak. Sometimes you need to really mine your desires to see what it is you truly want. But, or, you know, you can think that you want something and it can develop over time that no, actually that's not what you wanted after all. But there's a diagnostic component to design, but unlike the example of the doctor, there's not one proper treatment. You know, it's much more fluid. There's not only one good solution for a design dilemma. You know, there's not, you know, one color blue that will work in a room. So that's actually a happy thing. It makes it perhaps less easy, but it makes it more interesting.
Yeah, definitely. What is your process like? So after you actually get to know your...
Well, then I get drunk.
No, and then you go drunk.
That's after hours. No, I start with the furniture plans always. It helps figure it out for me, the flow of the house, the flow of the room, what kind of pieces of furniture. And then when we do fabrics, then we can imagine how the fabric is used throughout the room and throughout the space, how you connect one room to the next, what should be, you know, the colors as they connect to each other. And obviously the architecture is, I should have said that first. The architecture is incredibly important. Where are you doing this? And how can you support the architecture to either look appropriate to the style, or at the very least to be, what's the word, symbiotic.
And is every, the length of the process, does it sometimes take less time for a different type of client with a certain type of architecture versus another client?
Well, it all projects take very different times. Sometimes we're building the house with them. They hire
that's really cool.
They've bought the land, and you're working side by side with the architect. And that's the preferred method, because you really do have to be a part of conversations like where the outlet's going to go. If you have a sofa in the middle of the room, you have to have an outlet to put to plug in the lamp that's going to be on the table next to the sofa in the middle of the room. Therefore, you have to run electricity there. So, but that's not to say we don't many, many times come in when somebody's been living somewhere and they want to redecorate, or they bought an apartment and it's built and it's time for us to just do decorating as opposed to design. So some projects can take 5 years.
Oh my.
And some projects can take one.
Well, Alexa, I'm going to ask you just to hold your thoughts for a moment. We're going to take a super quick break, give some love to our sponsor. Also want to remind everyone that today's episode featuring Alexa Hampton, a Visionary Woman Award winner, is being sponsored by Moore College of Art and Design. Moore is the first and only women's visual college for undergraduates in the United States. Their Visionary Women Award recognizes women whose lives and careers have made a significant impact in the world of art and design, and they are national leaders in their fields. They're also powerful role models for the college's students, and Moore holds an annual event honoring these women, raising scholarship funds for the college's undergraduates. If you want to know more information, learn about Moore College of Art and Design, you can visit moore.edu. That's moore.edu.
You have been listening to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Segment 2 is coming right up.
Creating brand loyalty requires a unique blend of strategic communication and innovative technology. Pure Performance Communications works with businesses to move their audiences from awareness to action and impact by offering a digital marketing roadmap. Let us help you foster deeper engagement and forge stronger relationships along the way. Visit us at pureperformancecom.com. That's pureperformancecom with two M's.com.
Now, back to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge.
I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. Welcome back to the show. Alexa Hampton and I were just chatting about her career journey as an interior designer. Okay, so Alexa, we left off. We were talking about, of course, the way you got into interior design, and we just left off on process, which sort of begs a question. With the many projects that you work on, very high profile, does everything always run smoothly? And maybe you could just talk about obstacles and how you might combat that.
Yes, everything runs perfectly smoothly. I'm just kidding. No, that would be impossible. That's a fool's errand to even try for that. There are, as you would imagine, lots of logistical elements that go into construction and painting and design and schedules. And it's kind of like weaving a basket. So lots of things can go wrong. And sometimes it's as simple as the timing, that things are just taking too long. And as the decorator who has the kind of part, the last piece of the puzzle, yeah, that everybody's patience has worn out by then. And then other times it can be that there are actual mistakes that you've made that you have to correct. You have to immediately apologize, own it, and fix it. And then there could be things like, you know, I had a project where the contractor, before he even met me, decided he hated my guts.
Oh, no.
And it was a weird choice that, because as you can imagine, it did not make anything run smoothly. And he hated the client too. So she and I would just kind of huddle together wondering how we could just get through it.
Yeah.
There are all kinds of things that can go wrong, but I would assume that that's true of all business.
Absolutely.
You have to be able to problem solve and ask for help and be open about it when you need to be, and manage it and not lean on your client when you don't need to. A lot of it is real time decision making.
Yeah, I would imagine so. And asking for help, that's a really important point. I'm sure that you build teams of people that you trust and who you can go to? How important are those teams?
Well, they're huge. You know, when you're growing up, people always say to you, relationships are everything. But then you get to a point where you think to yourself, yeah, relationships really are everything. I have obviously tons of friends in this business, whether it's contractors, and maybe I need to ask them a question. I'm working on something in Florida and I need to ask my contractor in New York, you know, how do I fix this problem? Or sometimes you have to ask the client for help. You're not going to fix anything if you don't pursue every avenue.
Right. And when you're up against daily stress, what do you do as an entrepreneur, an interior designer? I mean, I've heard everything from the deep breathing to journaling to, you know, all different things. What do you do?
I have amazing colleagues in the office who are really just great. And we lean on each other a lot. I burst into tears when sometimes, I'll go home and pour myself a stiff drink. None of this would be what I would recommend anyone do. Yeah, burst into tears and drink heavily. But, sometimes that's what it is. Sometimes I'll go home and I'll say to my kids I have a twin 11-year-old and a 9-year-old daughter. Sometimes I'll be like, you know, I had a really bad day. And I will tell them, because I also want them to realize, I don't know if this is the right thing to do as far as parenting goes, but I do want them to know that the people they think are totally together, that things happen that you have to recover from, you know, that you can get stressed out and have a bad day, and that's okay. You just, you figure it out.
And you forge on. I think you're, as a role model, that's an important lesson that you're sharing with your children. Because if everything is all sunshine and roses, so to speak.
Right. They'll be horribly surprised.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. They'll do what they want to do, maybe go to school. And then when you get out into the work world, you're shocked at what you're seeing and hearing.
Or you think you're a failure because things aren't perfect. Also, what I was saying about asking for help, I definitely noticed with my father, and I noticed this with my colleagues at work, if somebody comes to you, or if I would go to my father and say, you know, this is going really badly, I need help with this, he was immediately, obviously, on my side trying to help me. But if I tried to sweep it under the rug and didn't let him know, and then it like reared its ugly head, he'd get furious. Nobody who's a normal person could possibly, you know, not want to help if asked for help. Like, I don't want to, if I'm working with a painter and he says, ugh, I made a mistake, you know, then I'm on his team.
Yeah.
You've all got to, that dynamic is super important. And I've said to clients, when I make a mistake, if I say, I'm sorry, they appreciate that. Once you start saying, oh, no, that's supposed to be like that, and it's clearly not supposed to be like that, then your trust breaks down. Then who do you believe? You can't even talk to each other anymore. So it's always better if there's a mess up, whether you're the author or the person listening, just have everybody be honest with each other.
Absolutely. I counsel many executives, and it's one of those things where if there is an I'm sorry in the cards, you better get to it as soon as possible. Right?
I think people are afraid of it because they're afraid of what that means. Like, could it lead to litigation?
Right.
But sometimes if I make a mistake on a job, like, I know I'm paying for it, literally. Like, I'm just going to have to suck it up, pay for whatever it is, and fix it as fast as I can. And that's how you maintain a relationship.
Absolutely. Because the reverse of that, there's no relationship and you probably will owe more in the end.
Well, and I can't stand it when somebody, you know, it's like an emperor's new clothes conversation. When somebody's trying to convince me of something I know is not true, I just have no patience for that. Then it means I can't speak to them in the future because I won't believe them.
And that probably means being selective about the people that you're working with, people that you...
Well, I mean, we all want to work with great people.
Yep.
you know, like nobody wakes up and goes, I'm going to work with some really shady people who tell me untruths.
Right. Exactly. But if you find out along the way, those people will no longer be with you.
Yeah, I will tell you that one of the hazards I find that's more for my clients and for me, but I never know how to answer them properly on this particular score, is if, for example, a major part of the team, whether it's the contractor or the, you know, some major trade ends up being weird, mm-hmm. you know, suspect in some way, it's always the question, you know, do we fire them? And I never know what the right answer is, because a lot of times they know where the bodies are buried. Yeah. And if you lose that person forensically, how do you know where the pipes are, where they were? How do you know these certain facts about a project? And I would say that's my biggest unsolved mystery about my business. You know, if things are going haywire, you know, how brave do you have to be about reshuffling the team?
Yeah, absolutely. No, that is a tough one, because there's things that you clearly need to know. And if you cut ties immediately, you don't have that.
Yeah. And saying to a client, fire your contractor right now is a huge thing to advise. So that's pretty much my biggest question mark, anxiety, you know, like sweat popping from my brow topic.
Yeah, that's...
But that's not a thing that happens all the time. I mean, I work, you know, one of my best friends in New York is my contractor, and he's my friend as a consequence of our great relationship working together. You know, he's not my friend who I do business with. He's someone I do business with who's so great and trustworthy and helpful and honest and accomplished that I just want to hang out with him.
Oh, that's great. So you mentioned your family before, your twin 11-year-olds. How cool is that?
Twin 11-year-old boys and a 9-year-old daughter.
Right, to have twins first.
That's shocking. Right? Actually, I think that's very lucky because all new parents are astonished.
Oh my gosh.
You know, I didn't know any different. And when I had my daughter, I was like, wow, she's raising herself. This is a cakewalk.
This is so easy. Oh my goodness. Yeah. So how does your family feel about your work?
They're totally proud of me, my kids. They insist that I'm the best in the world. And I'm like, no, really? Like, you can't say
yes,
that.
Yes, mommy kids. Is.
No. Like, yeah, mommy's the best. Which is adorable.
That's so
cute. I'm sure I've got like 2 more years of that before they tell me.
Then,
they don't enjoy the travel, but I'm excited that, you know, the boys at least, and my daughter, what am I saying? That it's totally not weird for them. Listen to me. I sound like a valley girl. It is not weird for them that their mommy is going on a plane to work. And they wouldn't think twice so far about women's equality or women in the workplace. It's completely normal to them. And when I've had stress in my heart about it, I think, well, you know, that was like my father was on a plane twice every week. And, you know, I adored him and I went into his business. So I'm going with the that's okay. Mothers and fathers are equal.
You experienced it and it was normal. And now your children are. And with technology today, it also makes it a lot easier. And they're so savvy. Right?
Yep. No, I by hook or by crook, they don't have them. So it's not that
interesting.
Easy. But, you know, we phone call when we can.
What?
I'm trying to stave off that bullet for as long as I can.
Oh yeah, that's a tough one. We have 4 adult children, and I think one of them was on MySpace when they were 12, and we were horrified when we learned. This was a long time ago. Now they're all in their 20s. So what do you actually do in your downtime when you're not designing?
Well, there it goes back to the drinking. I watch a lot of television.
It must be fun to hang out with.
Yeah. People are always like, I'd like to go drinking with you. And I'm like, really? Why? Oh, yes. I know why. I love to travel. I get tons of inspiration from traveling. You know, I read, I watch TV, I do all kinds of non-ambulatory activities. I am inert.
Do you do any binge watching of Netflix
I only do binge watching.
So do I.
And I it pains me to have to wait a week to watch Grey's Anatomy. I will pick something and just blow through it. And I am such an expert at it that my husband, when I'm traveling, he'll call me up freaked out. He's like, honey, I don't know what to watch. And I'm like, just go to my history, my viewing history on Netflix, and do what I did. He's like, okay.
That is so funny.
Now you know I can keep really... devices out of my kids' hands because it's yes! my blood.
Because we'll be looking at your history and saying, mommy, we can see what you watch and we'll do the same.
Every child of mine is going to have a healthy, robust relationship with devices. So I'm just putting off the inevitable.
Maybe your kids will still be playing outside and being creative in other ways.
Nope.
So let's take you back. You've talked so much. This is a question that I love to ask guests because you just never know what advice they're going to give. If you were going to give advice to your younger self, what would you say?
I'd say it's all going to be okay. Don't worry so much. But I would also say that the best work that I do is when I'm having fun. I think sometimes there's the desire to describe in our heads work as, you know, oh, it's work. You know, oh, I'm going to work. Oh, it's work.
It's like a downer.
Yeah. If you can make it fun, the result will be much better. And, you know, you'll be excited. You'll throw yourself into it. Like, what can you do to make it, you know, the most fun for you? And do it that way. Of course, if that means being drunk, don't do that. But, there's sometimes a habit in the design world and in decorating to make fun of the profession. Professionals making fun of the profession, of kind of drolly rolling their eyes and being like, hey, it's just a sofa. And I don't do that. Because obviously this is my life. If you denigrate what you do, even if you're trying to do it to gain perspective, if you do it enough, you'll start believing that what you're doing is foolish. And I think that's a terrible way to live one's life. So I don't like making fun of clients or of projects or, you know, I think it's a lovely profession. It's one that people want to be in, and we should, and I'm sure this is true of any profession. You've just always got to believe in, you know, you chose it. It's great. And an offshoot of that is somebody once came up to me and they're like, I can't stand Restoration Hardware. All my clients want it are white rooms. How do you put up with it? And there was a lot of eye rolling. And he said, I was like, well, that's interesting because I can go on Pinterest or Instagram and lose myself in hours looking at beautiful white rooms. If I can find 100 beautiful white rooms, and I can, and I'm a good designer, can't I make one? You know, there are 100 distinct, different, beautiful white rooms. I want to be the author of them. So if your client says, I want a white room, like, go out there and make the best white room you can make. You know, like, don't roll your eyes and be like, oh, it's all white. Like, you
have fun with it.
Who makes the beautiful white room?
Oh, that is awesome advice. Alexa, what are you excited about in 2018?
I am doing Kips Bay. Do you know what Kips Bay is?
No. What is that?
It is a show house in New York City that benefits the Boys and Girls Club of New York City. It's in the Bronx.
Great.
And it is a wonderful program. And they have supported the show house has supported designers for years. And doing this, like, it's a big designer event in New York that's gone on for really, really a long time. And to be a part of it is an honor. And also to do it, you're raising money for at-risk kids. So, you know, it's just a win-win-win all the way around. And you can have flights of fancy with your design that you wouldn't necessarily have otherwise, because you're borrowing things for the duration of the show, which is a month long. You can have access to things that you wouldn't necessarily otherwise have access to. So I'm very excited about that. I'm loving what I'm doing. It's like a neoclassical folly. I'm just so excited. And I also have, oops, that was my phone going off in the background. I apologize to everybody. It is the James Bond theme, so there's that.
Are you a James Bond fan?
I am a James Bond
fan. Me too.
Yeah, I love everything James Bond. So I'm excited about Kips Bay. I'm excited about new furniture designs that I'm working on. I'm really excited about that.
Nice.
I have a new book proposal that I need to write.
Oh my gosh.
That will be exciting when it's done. I might be procrastinating on that a little bit. I'm excited for my family to come home from the ski vacation. I'm excited. So traveling with my kids now, I travel so much for work that I've got a bazillion miles. So I can take the kids on trips. My husband and I can take them on trips. So getting to see the world with them
is
thrilling, and it is really inspiring for design. So I want to take them to Amsterdam around Thanksgiving. So, you know, any trip I take ushers in a new layer to the work. So that's always something I look forward to.
Well, you have a lot to be excited about in 2018. We're excited for you. Last question, super easy. Where can people find out more about you and your work?
Well, I'm very active on Instagram, which is alexahamptoninc.com. I have two books. One is called The Language of Interior Design, which is a sort of macro overview of what makes the components that make a room beautiful or a space beautiful. I liken it to the Julie Andrews approach. You know, once you know the notes to sing, you can sing most anything. And then the second book is called Decorating in Detail. And as you might imagine, it is more granular and about the details that in a day and age where we are more buttoned up. No, buttoned up sounds formal. That's not what I mean. We are more conformist in our interiors in terms of, you know, we don't have a French room or an English room. We have, you know, a sofa, and how many different sofa arms are you going to have? It's all these little details that make a space really specific to you. And where else can you find out about me? You know,
website?
Just on, yeah, it's definitely on the website where I have an e-commerce component. Thank you. That was like a nice mommy prompt. Like, honey,
don't forget your website.
Yeah. So there.
Terrific. Alexa, thank you very much for coming on the show, sharing your career journey, your stories, and your advice. We just so appreciate you and your time. Thank you.
It is an honor, and to be supported by Moore College is just thrilling.
It's wonderful. And yes, a big thank you to Moore College of Art and Design for sponsoring this episode with Alexa. And I also want to thank all of you for tuning into Women Worldwide. Until our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.